Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
Internet of Things, 9-plus sensor, I suppose, ultra station, that is a sort of box, and you pull a sensor out, it places it there, and it reads it. End of story. There's no powering up, all this type of stuff. We want to eventually get there. I'm in the path to getting there, and what I'm going to do, this podcast, as I'm on my homeward straight, just talk through a few positional ideas. So at a particular point, there's a sort of a configuration where I was going mobile phone, battery, very small board, and sensors, which essentially you have one output and chain to it and come back, and this is where you've basically sort of like do a baby USB port, so you can plug in as many devices, you don't have to get a second computer to do it. And that sort of failed on two fronts. One is the power taken up by the sensor, and the ability of the sensor to just only take up one port, which sort of moved you across to from a very small footprint to something just slightly larger. And I sort of look at now, it's probably 3 credit cards long, and it's the Arduino Mega, and it's got 70 digital I/O ports, or digital analog pulse width ports. And then on this large footprint, it makes sense to get a larger battery and start to cross engineer things. Now that during that place, it's a art of putting things together. Now, in the sort of research paper, I've deconstructed how education speaks, and I've sort of taken it over. I'm just basically, this is going on to the research paper. So education standards and methods break up teachers into 3 goes: beginning, maintenance, and leadership. And I've sort of just taken that and actually broken up the view of this in those 3 levels, adding a 4th level of the, you know, what a scientist thinks, and you know what is the merit in these different things. And this is one of the complexities. You can poo-poo the teacher thought, but they're not research scientists. They're people sharing practice, and they have not one theory, but they're dealing with many, many theories. They're in front of class, in a school, in different situations. And they're basically like the difference between a training instructor in a particular, say, jungle warfare school, and your soldiers who have to, you know, eat, drink, write home to the parents, have a shit, and all this type of stuff. As a soldier, there's a sort of a different thing to get through. So I'm just working through on that. Now, once you've gone to the Mega, you then have a power bank, and the power bank has to be managed. So the power bank I thought was going to last a week. Lasts about 48 hours on full running charge. It's got a fair amount of amps going through it. And the question is, so this could well be that I could blow this Arduino Mega, which will just put me back a week or so I get another one out from China. But this Arduino Mega has you can't address it. The power pack, you can't address it as a device. It's got the USB in, USB out. You can't send it a serial output. Its status is 4 LEDs which blink on and off, and so essentially know what that is, it's a photonic signaling, and essentially these four little point LEDs tell you the status. So when it's being charged, it blinks more regularly, and as it's into, I don't know, some percentage, if it's say 100 to 90%, all four lights are on. If it goes the next bracket down, three lights are on, the fourth light's blinking, and it sort of goes through that that sequence to tell you the information roughly. And so if you're running a unit, you need that information. That as I've built it up, I've lassoed and tied the unit in a hard place to access. So what that means is that I have to have an Arduino light detector, so it can report its battery status to the web. And really it requires sort of a separate web structure for the data, which is a user and a data. So the user just puts in their name and it creates a website with that user's name and just pumps the data into it. But it needs another website which has got the unit's name, and it records the power load and usage and where it's at. So you can be in a school, for instance, and you know that you've got 20 units, you've lit them out, and they report, you know, their power and stuff like that, and I might send an SMS, you know, I need more power, which is a little bit better than the person sort of seeing the data stop and working out. So what means that the Arduino has a light detector port, and it has to be, you know, it's got to be a certain one, and to try and make a photonic sensor, an Arduino sensor to work with that. So that's one unit. So, and that sensor costs about $1. So really you've got a board and it costs $1, you know, extra, $1.30 for one, less than $1 for a packet of five, but you're going to build one. And you have to create a clip which clips onto the battery and darks out everything and measures the light pulse. It's, fortunately there is a light pulse, so it's off and on. Oh gee, was they really changing this? I don't know how this operates. It's sorry, I'm just walking past the Glenbrook station that they're building. So that's one aspect. Now the the mass sensors. So I've got a sequence of three mass sensors, one for every tripod. So you put your tripod on, the thing on, and your tripod is your mass scale. So you can tear it, put it in, or it can go in. And these mass scales, you can actually measure their performance over time, and the performance over time is shit. Quite, you know, this is, they've got 2-3% variance up and down. It seems to be caused by something. I think it's something to do with the way the resin is formed up, and it seems as though that's something that you could, if you could measure, you could engineer and compensate for it. But I don't think the people are bothering to do this, because what happens is that the concept is that you zero measure, put something up, zero measure, and this variation is stuck in there. Now, the way that they've done it is that they've made a resonless, lower, smaller footprint, lighter, better sensor, and they're charging a premium for it. Now, the actual theory of this is that you're using surplus components where people have paid the premium. They're probably paying the cost of three or four components to get a component which is worth three or four. Yeah, you know, say if you've got five components and you want to get a good spec on it, for you specify spec, people can only produce that. They produce these substandard units, which vary. So what happens is that I'm beginning to see, I've got three mass sensors, three temperature sensors, and I can see how to compensate for each of it. Now, the temperature sensors indeed are fairly easy to compensate for, because over a couple of days they show the same characteristic offset, they show no drift, whereas the mass sensors, these little counterbalances, so you've got basically a four joint cantilever with strain sensors on those four things. You measure this strain in a very much way, and there's a Wheatstone bridge which zeroes it, and there's this process which really isn't necessary if the entire thing's been handled by software. Anyway, but it really has to be zeroed, and so your unit really has to zero itself up. Is just read how much it's reading of zero mass or no mass or whatsoever. Now, the actual relative ratio being zeroed after zeroing is really good. Okay, so they don't go off, they don't drift in calibration, they just drift in the zero amount going in. So what I have just done is got little pulse width servos, and two of them, and they will just, the little arm will go up and lift up the leg, lift it clear up, just only a millimetre off until it drops down. Two various things. I've got to think of the code of how to do it, and so that's in, and then the system does a tearing. Now, really, the tear system does nothing to the sensor. It does nothing to the zeroing scales. It just sees what's its zero level in there, and essentially at a particular point you want a sort of a data file for a particular unit. So in a particular unit you want to store the battery level and some calibration factors, and then you want it to every couple of minutes take a few seconds off and tear it to put it itself again, and possibly, you know, if it's going to be super smart, say if it does it once every, say, 5 minutes, what it does is it takes a zero reading at 0 minutes, zero meeting at 5 minutes, and makes an approximation, goes back and revises the thing that it had a linear drift in that period to work out. And in general, over a 2 or 3 minute period, there's very few turnovers, the actual frequencies there. Now, the other thing I found out, much to my horror, just running it in, is that the load sensors are very static sensitive, That is, if you have wires around it, it'll pick it up and come in as shit. And it took a little while to see it, and then you can see, oh well, the load sensor actually has four wires for each on bridge, and other wires for the shielding. And yeah, really, I should shield it. It's just that the ability to place on shielding afterwards is, you know, not so good. And I've just constructed it such that already the wires are clearly away from it. So you sort of say, you want to be able to shield it and try and work it out. So there's that aspect of it. And so I'm just slowly doing it. And what happened was, about 2 days ago, I don't know, this was, it left an ugly white mark on my tracksuit. The potassium chloride super solution with a little bit of anti-algal stuff in it, soaking solution. When I turned over, I inadvertently turned the entire little tube out. My concern here is how this unit should be stored and what the storage should be. And essentially, these units, I'm really a bit conflicted about it. So they have a buffer is a multi polyvalent acid, so it will have a very stable pH over a range. And so if you put it into that, you can take it out. Now, my sort of issue is that the issue is it's just so stupid. You got this entire probe, you put it in. I sort of want to have it such that it only dips in to the very height of the probe. You know, I would almost like to have some sort of hosing mechanism which pumps it out, so it doesn't spray your buffer everywhere over. Because the entire thing is that you've got to clean it, and it's a mechanical operation. And it's a mechanical operation of doing a pH probe. This really speaks to me of it really needs to be done by a robot in sort of a central situation, where essentially you need it to have a system of three, your storage solution, three cleaning solutions, your test, and then go into the three cleaning solutions, you know, to wash it over and over again, and then your next test, and essentially you want it to essentially dry off. So you almost want a compressed air to dry it. Well, you don't want to dry it off too much, but you want to blow anything off. Then you want to put in the basic cleaning solution, the other cleaning solution, and measure your pH as you go to see if there's an addition. I don't know what the actual cleaning solution, and so it goes very dirty, moderately okay, super clean. And what happens is that after each experiment, you get rid of the top one. Then after a term, of use. You get rid of the middle one and the various ones so that you can rinse. It's sort of like the homeopathic way of doing it. So that's the sort of thing I want to do. I just can't, I always want this to have, very fine tubes which go in, and you've got your sensor there, and you hook in the tubes, and it's in its little container, and it pumps in and pumps out cleaning, the cleaning solution one, cleaning solution two, cleaning solution three, then your storage solution. Then when it's ready to go, it takes out the storage, pumps out the storage solution. I think it can be done. You've got it in there, and it pumps these things in, so it's ready for use. So that's something I want to get done. But so measuring pH is something to consider, and how that's done at a school. So that's the end of this. I've managed to do my walk, and I'll put this away. And thanks a lot for listening. I'll just check. Remarkably, things are going well, and all I've done here to improve this is bind up the leads so they don't clatter, and put a rubber band on this so it pulls in the plug, so the plug never comes out. Thanks a lot for listening.
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.